You are listening to a Campfire Firecast.
We're all falling and we need a place to hide. A safe place somewhere in the woods, we can start a fire.
Welcome to our end of year Firecast from Campfire Convention. This is your fire starter, Pete Lawrence, bringing you some of our members' highlights from 2017. We also talked to artist, photographer and Axbridge Beacon founder Barry Causton about the inspiration for his photographic work as he travelled around the States in a somewhat turbulent year that for many has been surprising, unpredictable and impossible to keep on top of. Anyway, here's to 2017 and some of our memories. Listen up and let the sparks fly.
Juliet McClay of the Axbridge Roxy. I think the standout thing for me was meeting Paul Beattie, who wrote The Sellout and won the Booker last year with it, I think. And we heard him speak in Bristol, and it was really inspiring. I'm very, very happy about that. I'm a big reader, and so that was a big deal for me. Because, of course, a lot of what's been going on in 2017 is not that positive, so I'm going to say a positive one. That was my favourite thing.
So I'm Kate Edgley, and my highlights of 2017 are having a big article published in the family section of The Guardian. And there were a lot of sort of extraneous highlights to that one big highlight, which were about getting a lot of good feedback about it, and that actually being the spur and the encouragement for me to start writing my book. I had a lovely week in the Lake District. I had a lovely week in the Cotswolds. I went water skiing with my son. They're my highlights.
With the writing, is there any more you can say about what gave you the incentive to do the article that got published in The Guardian and what processes you went through in the build-up to that?
Yeah, well, it's really on the back of having had a very tough few years and separating from my husband. That was actually in 2013. And was completely not what I expected to happen at all. I did think that we would be together forever. So my life being turned upside down in that way and very unexpectedly was a lot to cope with. And so, it was a very tough journey that I never expected to go through. And so I guess it's that typical sort of... in the face of adversity, something creative is coming out of it.
I'm Luke, and I think possibly my highlight for 2017 might have been Borderlands Festival, which is a Burning Man-inspired festival where I witnessed and found myself actively taking part in the most... just incredible self-organisation around inspiring creative purpose.
Sounds really interesting. Any more you want to say on that?
I would check out Burns. Maybe not even so much the original Burning Man in the Nevada desert, but actually some of the other ones that have cropped up that arguably are actually closer to the 10 principles of Burning Man. But yeah, Borderlands in Denmark was really mind-blowing. Just really, no one was an observer, everybody was an active participant, you know, and many people like me being there for the first time and just finding really attractive invitations to actually contribute in quite meaningful ways towards an experience that was wholeheartedly unforgettable and really quite lovely.
And here's Julia Black, who put together the Future of Education Think Shop at the second Campfire Convention in London on November the 4th.
I think my highlight has probably been really, really recent, during a trip to America, where I, for the first time, was able to experience what a guided meditation was like. In the past, I've kind of always loved the idea of it, but I've kind of always been in that kind of consciously thinking, right, don't think, don't organise my thoughts, and I've never been able to kind of get to a place where I've just thought, right, you know, a stillness, and... yeah, in Laguna Beach, this woman did this most amazing talk beforehand, and then she took, there was 220 of us in the room, and she took us on this guided meditation that had me kind of literally feel like a visual, important moments of my life were appearing in front of me like a screen, and I guess I felt the younger sense, the child that I was, I guess very carefree, taking those risks, was meeting me at a time when I'd been really, also felt really free, which was when I was climbing mountains in Andes, and those pivotal moments seemed to come and meet and really resonated with me without me having to think. So that was really special.
I'm Guy Morley. I run a company called No Nation, which is a sort of facilitating, producing sort of company. And my highlights for 2017 have got to be... actually, one of them was quite a surprise because I've become a little bit jaded around going to festivals. And I went to go to a great new festival in Cornwall called Tropical Pressure, which I just think was a small festival, 5,000 people, was just an eye-opener. They'd had a Friday night where there was Latin, a Saturday that was African, and a Sunday which was Caribbean. And I just think that was such a refreshing sort of way to start an outdoor festival. So that's one of that sort of gave me a bit of a positive thing about the festival isn't a dead and moribund and done thing. There are new ways of doing it, which I was really happy about. Other highlights for me, I think probably reading. So I discovered a writer like Kent Harouf, who's sort of somewhere on that Cormac McCarthy sort of thing, but more of a humanist, fantastic writer. So I've enjoyed reading this year, which is a really nice thing too. And music-wise, I think one of my highlights from 2017 is probably some of the music that came out of a festival that I went to in Cuba, which was bringing together Cuban, Afro-Cuban folkloric traditions with experimental electronic music, and there were some people there that we will have heard of, like Plaid. There were some other people that we won't be aware of, like Ari Woe, who just produced, again, something that just made me think, okay, it hasn't all been done before, and there is plenty of new stuff to be awake and alive to and receptive to.
Hello, this is Ruth here. The highlight of my year was probably the Women's March on the 21st of January, when something like 4.5 million women and men marched in towns and cities right across the globe for human rights. Wikipedia said it was the largest single day protest in US history and the largest in Washington, D.C. since the Vietnam War. For me, this was not simply a reaction to the soul-crushing election of Trump, but a joyous reignition to build bridges and not walls. I just loved the home-knitted pink pussy ear hats and all the fabulous and witty placards. It made me feel hope again. Second, I guess, would be the election result in England, which, although it was not a win in government terms for progress, was certainly two fingers up to the current government. And that, too, I think, made many of us feel that this is something that is worth fighting for and that actually we can win on behalf of humanity. Thank you.
I'm Anthea. Anthea Davis. I can think of significant moments, but they're not necessarily highlights. They're almost accentuated lowlights in a way. being able to stand up and deliver a self-prepared eulogy for my mother when she died in June was a great moment to find I could do that. You know, it was the big thing for me. Yeah, so that was, it's not exactly a highlight, but it was certainly momentous, being able to say some great things about a lovely woman.
And what was the process you went through? Can you talk a bit more about how you prepared for that and what gave you the inspiration to write and how you prepared yourself to actually deliver it?
Well, interestingly, I always thought, when I thought about it in principle in the past, I always thought I just wouldn't be able to do that when the time came. But so what I did when it all happened unexpectedly, my mum died, obviously I sat down and gathered thoughts and talked to different people about their interaction with my mother and looked into anything I could find through photos and and backlogs of information that had been stored. And as I pulled it together, I was thinking, well, because it had been suggested to me that I could write it and somebody else would deliver it for me. But as I pulled it together, I thought, well, the only person who can really deliver this with any meaning is me, with any heartfelt sort of thought into it, because I've prepared it, it's come from me. So actually, I really need to do this. And I still wondered if I could. And as the time got closer, I just became more confident that I would do it. And I was really, really pleased that I did. Yeah, very, very glad that I did that in the end.
How did people react to it?
Very positively. I mean, I wasn't looking for reaction, but I did get a number of people coming up to me afterwards and really appreciating what I'd done. And I think a lot of that was probably because it was heartfelt and very genuine and just completely what I wanted to say about my feelings and concerning my mum, as well as obviously all the stories that other people had brought together for me. So, yes, it was very, very positive in that sense too, I suppose, although that wasn't what I was looking for. Yeah, I'd always thought that, you know, other people have the skills to do to present speeches or eulogies or whatever in public, because it was not something I'd ever... I'd done speaking through work, we're very much in a controlled way of sort of talking about a topic that I was removed from. And I thought, well, anything emotional, anything close to me, I won't be able to do it. I'll just break down and it won't work. And even writing it, I thought, I'm not sure I'd even be able to write it, because I'll be so emotional and caught up with the whole situation that I just won't be able to do it. But when it came to it, all those thoughts kind of went to one side in a way. I sort of found a sort of inner strength that kind of just drove me forward to actually prepare the whole thing. And as the time got closer to actually delivering it, it just became the natural thing that I needed to do. And the strength just came from, well, it sounds a bit, I don't know, contrived in a way, but it just came from completely within me, that it was something I just had to do, and it sort of took me forward. It was very powerful. It was just, I just knew that I was going to do it and it was going to work and it would be fine. So, and I'm not a confident person, I'm really not. Tend to doubt myself in all sorts of scenarios. So I was really quite amazed that where that strength came from, I suppose. Because it was very much, certainly I expected it to be totally outside my comfort zone, if you like, because I was, you know, standing up in public is not my thing in the first place. I get anxious, I get nervous and all the rest of it. But on that day, I didn't. Though I say it myself, I do know it went well, and I had a lot of feedback that confirmed that for me. But I felt from myself that it went well. I was pleased with what I'd done. One sort of thing, sort of not a final thing, but an important thing to do for my mother, you know, and for my dad really as well.
You are listening to a Campfire Firecast.
my many campfire highlights was meeting Barry Corsten, who hosted the excellent Axbridge event in High Summer. Barry's travels have taken him around the world as an artist and photographer. Check out his photographic gallery of Banksy's Dismal Land on the campfire site. I recently revisited the Somerset town to ask him about the inspiration for his art and how it provided a memorable 2017 highlight for him.
It was shot near Monument Valley, which is obviously an incredible sort of landscape, and Navajo tribal area. And there was quite a lot of graffiti around the fact that all the water has been stolen from the Colorado, and there's lots of electricity and lots of agricultural projects and things like that have used the water that's the water from their land, and that they've got nothing out of it except, you know, poverty and depression. So that was kind of like, and it felt very sacred land and felt like an amazing place, but there was this dislocation and isolation as well of the Navajo that was still there. And I was driving kind of away from these huge rock outcrops that are Monument Valley, and I saw what sort of looked like a traditional 1950s American bungalow community. And for some reason, I just thought, that looks kind of worth investigating. And I pulled in, started driving around, and realised that there were Navajo who were living there. And I turned a corner, and there were 15 wild horses walking through suburban America. And I was like, that's just, it was, you know, you could have stayed and made a documentary about it, because there might be a moment that actually, perhaps once a week, one of the Navajo comes out and whistles or whatever, or calls the horses over. Somebody must have an interaction with them. And then on that day, they come over and they all jump on and they go riding through the wilds, and it's like, wow. But maybe not. But it was totally surreal, and they were just going wandering up, and grazing on the you know, by these American cars and on the front porches of these houses. And I was just like, that is the surreal moment that I've been looking for. And rather than something celestial like the total eclipse, it was cultural. And so the image itself was kind of created. I'm not going to go into kind of how I got to it or what it is, but it was the fact that the title is called Suburban States, rather than being shot in the United States, it's shot in the suburban states. And this is a suburb, but the suburbs of America seem to have got a kind of very twilighty and, you know, certainly as somebody who lives over in Britain, it's difficult for us to kind of quite work out what those divisions are over there. And they were pretty manifest, you know, whereas a few, even 3 years ago, before now, you could have gone into a cafe and it would have said, with signs on the door that says, you know, carrying of open arms is completely fine, you'd have kind of laughed at it. Whereas now it just looks dangerous and it looks divided. That's sort of what that picture's about a bit as well.
I'm Eugenie. My highlight of 2017 was getting a distinction for my master's and getting more involved in my community via Campfire Convention. I loved our second meeting. I was very moved by the story. Remind me, Pete, who told the story, because it's a good story, the new narrative.
Sally Hughes.
Sally Hughes's narrative. Yes, thank you. Dyslexic brain there, sorry. But Sally Hughes's narrative was exciting. And leaving college and getting back to the world of work is also quite exciting. So that's that.
So my name is Mads. And 2017, on a personal level, has been a year of getting to a point of feeling really stagnant and frustrated, and then deciding to make some changes. And so now feeling like things are quite uncertain in the future, but realising that is feeling more productive than feeling stuck. So that's like been the personal thing. I think in terms of what's been going on, I feel like to be honest, it feels like a bit of a nadir at the moment. and that we may be hitting a kind of rock bottom. So I'm just trying to stay hopeful that the bigger picture maybe reflects that sort of personal feeling that we've come to a point where things can't get a lot worse, and that people are going to start just insisting on making change and throwing things up in the air and doing things differently, and that we feel like we're in a more hopeful place in a year's time.
You are listening to a Campfire Firecast.
Hi, I'm Steve Hoare, and my highlight of 2017 was probably recording my friend's band, because I've never done that before, and it was amazing, and they're beautiful, and they're not even really a band, they just get together and play music occasionally, but I convinced them that they have to be recorded because they're much better than they think they are, and it was a pleasure to be in that room for two whole days.
That's it. I'm Jenny Barrett, and to me the thing that stands out the most about 2017 that I've picked up is doing things with purpose. That's kind of setting me up for 2018.
I'm Lorraine Inglis, and the highlight of my year is being able to learn to take the breaks. Some people, like myself, just take on too much, and it's hard to say no. And it's been interesting to watch myself evolve, going, I'm not going to be effective if I continue to say yes to everything and burn myself out. So it needs for me to look at things and be balanced in what I take on, so I can continue to be an effective campaigner and activist.
So a degree of self-realisation.
Yes, there's been a lot of self-realisation, a lot of self-development. So that's highlight of 2017.
Hi there, my name is Toby or Tobias, and my surname is Hug. In German we pronounce it Hug or Hug. But I prefer to be called Mr. Hug. So circle singing is about collaborative music making. We are creating music together, and there's a space for everybody to express themselves, but it all comes together in one musical context. And I think this fits really nicely with the philosophy of Campfire. You have to be present, you have to listen, but you're also being heard. Everyone has their space and their moment where it's their turn to contribute and to raise their voice. I think Campfire is an amazing forum to exchange ideas, to be stimulated and to be inspired, and to collaborate and to facilitate change ultimately. But it's also about something sensual and tangible. You're sitting around a campfire, you're in a room together, you're sharing an experience of warm food, laughter, and so adding music to it makes a lot of sense. This belongs to Campfire, it's what we associate with it. And at the convention, somebody asked, how do we build a community? Well, the quickest way to do that is to start a choir. When we sing together, we instantly create trust, we make connections, and being connected on such a basic level, not a virtual, not an intellectual, but on a physical way through vibrations, is really powerful, and ultimately it's healing. So I think that's what Campfire is about as well, creating those connections, but on all levels, not just on one level or a virtual level. And that positive network that supports and inspires, that's really where ideas come from. And especially in these times at the moment, I think that's what's needed. People are disconnecting, they're separating on all levels rather than working together. I've met some extraordinary people through Campfire, and I think it's a fantastic network, and I'd really love to bring my musical ideas to it.
And it's those musical highlights and collaborations conducted by Mr. Hug that, for me, was one of the amazing highlights of the year 2017, the circle singing at the second convention. And I'm in the studio attempting a remix of the track, so watch this space. Being out on the road for me, doing the campfire conversations, was a real highlight. Not only just going around to a variety of campfires, from Ashburton in the south to Edinburgh in the north, meeting people, hearing about local concerns, local ideas, people's visions, initiatives, but also being
Out on the Road was a learning experience for virtually the whole year. And I'd like to thank everyone who gave me some space for their incredibly warm hospitality. Although unsettling at times, it's been a highly memorable experience which I'll always value. So here's to 2017 and to everyone who brought so much to the campfire, and a big year ahead for 2018.
You have been listening to a Campfire Firecast.